It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A Neenah resident recently received emails from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security calling for him to self-deport, saying, quote, "Do not attempt to remain in the United States. The federal government will find you," even though he is a citizen of the United States, born in Pennsylvania.
He reached out to U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin's office, and the mistake was eventually corrected. But the question that remains is, who is being deported or under threat of deportation? Today, we look at the deportation drive and how it affects people in a wide variety of legal situations.
Sarah McKinnon is a UW-Madison professor in rhetoric, politics, and culture. She's co-chair of the university's human rights program, and her books include Gendered Asylum, Race and Violence in U.S. Law and Politics. Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today. Sarah,
thanks for having me. Sorry.
Looking at this story WPR reported, Tom Franz and Neenah receiving these emails saying leave the United States, even though he's a citizen, not the only case like that in the country. What does that say to you about the scope of this drive for mass deportations over the last couple months?
Yeah, I mean, I see a number of people that received that message. Those with parole status reportedly received that message. And it was really alarming. And as you mentioned, with the Neenah resident, U.S. citizens also mistakenly received that message. I think this is an indication of just how many efforts are at work right now to really ramp up the deportation regime. And some of these efforts are things that we've seen before. And some are completely new tactics. And so there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of worry and concern. And there's a significant concern about individuals' due process and really having the chance to demonstrate that they have a legitimate reason to be in the United States, that they are in regular status, or that they are, in fact, U.S. citizens, as is the case with the story you reported.
I wanted to bring up the issue of due process. There have been arguments. Do people of different statuses, if ICE comes to them, do they have due process right to challenge deportation? A concern if U.S. citizens are accidentally or otherwise targeted by ICE as here illegally, and they, because of that targeting, don't receive due process, they would have no opportunity to explain, I am in fact a citizen. Is there a concern that without that assumption of due process for all these categories, people who clearly shouldn't be deported could still end up being removed from the country?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a concern. There are instances of people who have been deported who shouldn't have been deported or who have been deported to places where they shouldn't have. So the instance of the individual from El Salvador who's now in a Salvadoran prison is a really important example. That individual had withholding of removal to El Salvador, which meant that the only place that he could not be removed to was El Salvador. And we find him now in El Salvador. And there's a lot of resistance about returning him back to the United States. These are instances where there's a clear example of a lack of due process. I think in general, what we can say about the process of deportation is that it is typically a really long process. So someone who has interaction with Immigration and Customs Enforcement will then typically be placed in a detention center to be held before there is the processing of removal, so the deportation processing. This typically takes weeks, months, a lot of time. And so the in-between, there's usually time to contact someone's loved ones and an attorney and try to get the matter resolved. But there are definitely indications where under the current administration, the process is happening faster and faster. And there are people who have not had due process. So Venezuelan individuals who were removed to El Salvador on the basis of being connected to the terror organization Tren de Aragua, which was framed as a terrorist organization. There was never a due process to really vet the claim about their connection to that organization. And so in those instances, I think we have a clear indication that there is worry for all of us to be concerned about this.
A lot of the campaign talk from the Trump campaign leading up to the election last year talked about violent people who perform violent crimes, who are charged with or convicted of violent crimes in the United States while in an illegal immigration status. Targets set of something on the order of 1,000 to 1,500 immigration arrests per day coming from the Trump administration. If we're looking for those kind of targets, can we do that just arresting people who have committed violent crimes, or does that have to, by just surely by those numbers, would that have to include other categories as well?
I believe it would have to include other numbers. And I think we're seeing indication of this. So as we look at the deportation regime right now, there are also other efforts that connect to this. So the administration is encouraging individuals in irregular status to self-deport. And they've created an application that you can have on your phone called CBP One or CBP Home, where that process can continue. I think we're seeing a lot of instances. That letter that the man from Nina received, I think, is another example of the regime of self-deportation that is a part of this. And so it is not the case that individuals with criminal convictions will be the only ones impacted by the deportation efforts. In fact, we've seen lots of indications that that's not the case. And then the other thing that I think is really important is that even individuals with criminal convictions, many of these people have charges that are for really relatively minor things, such as driving without a license. Oftentimes, when we think of who is a criminal, the vision is, you know, really severe. But in the context of immigration, that is just not the case. The majority of individuals who are in irregular status in the United States and maybe have had interaction with law enforcement are for really relatively minor infractions. And these individuals are also especially vulnerable to deportation. And of course, people with final orders of removal are vulnerable to deportation.
Sarah McKenna is with us from UW-Madison looking at deportation policy. Sarah, some people with various kinds of legal status seem to be targeted. We've seen here in Wisconsin, for example, students here under higher education visas, having that status removed. What are you watching for maybe on your own campus?
Yeah, there is a lot of concern and worry. Our international students, you know, we are in the midst of almost in final exam period, and the level of anxiety and fear has just skyrocketed. Our international students are worried at any moment that they'll receive a message that their CVIS status has been terminated or that their visa has been revoked. And there are many challenges to those cases in the courts. I think we're going to see a lot more information and clarity about whether or not that's possible, whether or not this was a process that follows the law. I think that's still left to be, that's still very much unclear. But in the midst of it, our students are really worried and concerned. It's challenging.
There are so many categories it may be difficult to answer this question. But if someone is either in person challenged by ICE, the knock on the door or whatever the case may be, or receives that email threatening deportation, what would the starting point be to see what their rights are?
Yeah, so I think it's important to understand the difference between public and private spaces or public and non-public spaces. So our homes are private spaces. So that means that for Immigration and Customs Enforcement to enter, there should be a judicial warrant that goes along with that, with specific information. In public spaces, we have seen instances of ICE officials picking up individuals that they're targeting for various dynamics. The young woman from Turkey, the student from Turkey who is now in a detention center, is a really, I think, excellent example of one of these instances. We have also seen under the administration a shift in protected spaces. So churches, schools, courthouses, hospitals, playgrounds, these are now places that the administration says ICE officials can do seizures in and around. There have been some challenges to that. So churches, there's an injunction on that case. At schools and hospitals, the dynamic between what's a public space in those spaces and what's a private space become really, really important to understand. And so there's just a lot of concern and worry about how one is navigating their life and where they can be at any given time.
I want to take our last just over a minute or so to ask about your research, your Migration in the Americas project, much bigger picture. What are you and your colleagues learning about migration to the United States?
Yeah, so the Migration in the Americas project built to really create more information about safe passageways of migration and safe places to reside throughout Latin America and the Americas, the Western Hemisphere. Our work has shifted in the last few months to think about the United States as a space and really to ramp up the information that's available for our immigrant communities here in the United States. But we also are continuing to work in Latin America. And one of the things that we've seen in the last few months is a shifting dynamic of reversed flow and forced return. So deportations to countries in Latin America then create a forced return. And also individuals are realizing, wow, there's no pathway for me to enter the United States to apply for asylum. So let me figure out my next best place to go for a safe place to live. I think that's really important to understand. For the majority of individuals we work with, they are really looking for a safe place to live for them and their families. And so that work continues in really nuanced ways with our partners throughout Latin America.
Sarah, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Sarah McKinnon, professor of rhetoric, politics, and culture at UW-Madison. She's co-chair of the university's human rights program. She joined us for a look at the different groups affected by deportation in the last couple of months. If you have a story to share or a question about how all of this works for different people under different statuses, let us know about it. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.